The following is an excerpt from the Science Podcast. To hear the whole show, visit www.sciencemag.org and click on Science Podcast.
Next up, we have Nadia Whitehead, intern for our online daily news site. She's here to talk about some recent stories. I'm Sarah Crespi. First up, we have a story on the king of carnivores. Humans are not the only threat to the big animals of the African Serengeti. Since the 1990s, lions appear to have been enemy number two for cheetahs and wild dogs. Nadia, what evidence is there that lions were not being very nice to their fellow predators?
Right. Research in 1994 found that lions were killing more than 50% of cheetah cubs in Serengeti National Park. For wild dogs, it was just as bad. As the lion population surged, their number declined. Eventually, wild dogs vanished completely from the park.
So the question that came out of this earlier research is, what's the best way to conserve all of these species? We don't want to kill off the cheetahs in the course of saving the lions. How did the researchers look further into this question?
Researchers decided to conduct a study to see if lions really were suppressing the populations of cheetah and wild dogs. Using long-term data that monitored the number of lions, cheetahs, and wild dogs in the park, they took a look at how the three animals used the park's various habitats. They then calculated what the chances were of a cheetah and wild dog actually running into a lion were. The results showed that the increasing number of lions didn't trigger a drop in cheetahs. The cheetahs actually remained stable over time, even though they were losing their cubs. However, lions were spelling the end for dogs. Dogs that did survive were found on the edge of the park.
How did the dogs and the cheetahs end up with such a different result from being nearby the lions?
The team thinks that the wild dogs react differently to lions. They think that they work really hard to avoid lions in the wild and survive only by getting kicked out of the habitat. On the other hand, cheetahs use the same area as lions, but carefully monitor them and stay away. Cheetahs also aren't as noisy as wild dogs, so they attract less attention.
Does the fact that these two different species have two different tactics for taming the lion threat, does that have an impact on the strategies that might be used for their conservation?
The paper highlights that cheetahs are pretty adaptable creatures and are good at taking care of themselves, so we really don't need to be worrying about them. For wild dogs, it's a different story. There's a new sense of urgency to conserve them, and scientists are suggesting that we make larger reserves with densely wooded areas where dogs have been found to do better.
Next up, we have a story on just how good monkeys are at math. There's a longstanding debate on the abilities of animals to do math. That is, actually making calculations rather than judging size or comparing quantity. But a new study looking at this question found some very math-like abilities in macaques. So, Nadia, how do you train a monkey to do math?
Well, it took 4 months, but researchers were able to teach three macaques to associate the numbers 0 through 9 and 15 letters with the values between 0 and 25. When given the choice between two symbols, the monkeys typically chose the larger value to get more droplets of water, orange juice, or soda as a reward. They then tried to see if they could add the symbols together. They would give them a choice between a single symbol and a sum of two numbers. By the end of the project, they showed that they could add the two symbols and compare the sum to a single symbol.
So they weren't just comparing symbols. They're doing math with two symbols and then comparing that with a third symbol. How do we know they weren't just memorizing an even larger set of symbols that included these combinations?
So the researchers definitely made sure it wasn't a process of memorization, but true addition. They taught the animals an entirely new set of symbols using Tetris-like blocks instead of numbers and letters. Even with these blocks, the macaques showed the ability to add again and calculated combinations they had never even seen before.
And the macaques did learn how to do this, but they weren't actually very good at it, right?
Yeah, they definitely aren't mathematicians, and they were not always 100% accurate. They showed a tendency to underestimate a sum of two numbers when the two were close in value. For instance, they would choose the number 13 over the sum of 8 and 6.
So this is kind of a systematic bias in the monkey math mind. So what does that teach us about the way numbers and calculations are processed in general?
So those errors that I mentioned show us that monkeys pay more attention to a big number than a little one, which goes against this theory that says the brain always underestimates the value of large numbers. It shows that estimating values is key in the ability to add.
Finally, we have a story on the importance of the Y chromosome. The mammalian sex-determining chromosomes, the X and the Y, are very different from each other in the number of genes they carry, the shape of the genetic material itself, and their basic size. The X is about 150 million base pairs, while the Y is about 50 million base pairs long. We've known the sequence of the human genome for quite a while now, including the X and Y chromosomes. What new way did someone come up with for looking into the Y chromosome?
So we all know that males have an X and Y chromosome, while females have two X chromosomes. However, the X chromosome has a lot more genes within it, about 2,000, compared to the Y chromosome, which has about 100 genes. Scientists wanted to look at why the Y chromosome had so few, believing that perhaps these very few genes are more important than we think. They ended up conducting a study to see which genes in the Y chromosome are shared across various species.
What kinds of similarities did they see in these chromosomes?
They looked at chromosomes in multiple animals, including humans, chimpanzees, and mice. And they found that in addition to the genes that determine sex, there are 18 genes that are highly similar between all the species. These gene functions include controlling the expression of genes in many other areas of the genome and regulating a lot of different processes.
What about those of us who possess two X chromosomes? Do we have these highly important 18 genes?
The short answer is that we women do have these genes. In fact, we have two copies of them. What the researchers noticed was that these are dose-dependent genes. They need two copies in order to function. In men, one copy is on the Y chromosome.
So these Y chromosome genes appear to be important because they've stuck around for so long. But what about their exact role in these organisms? Is that the next step in the research?
Exactly. Scientists now plan to look in detail about the exact role of these genes, what they do, where they're expressed in the body, and which are required for survival. They also want to know how these genes affect risk for disease or disease symptoms, because they clearly do a lot more than just establish whether someone is male or not.
What else is on the site this week, Nadia?
We also have a piece up about how fish can raise their voices or yell, and there's some pretty neat sounds that come with that piece. We also have a story about how a mysterious quacking sound coming from the ocean has been solved. In Insider, one of our latest stories is about how the number of Indian students applying to graduate school in the U.S. is skyrocketing. So be sure to check out all these stories and more on the Science website.
Thanks, Nadia.
Thanks, Sarah.
Nadia Whitehead is the intern for our online daily news site. I'm Sarah Crespi. You can check out the latest news and the policy blog, Science Insider, at news.sciencemag.org.